Okay. I am impressed that you all are here. I'm impressed that I am here. But great job, you all. You're inspiring. I brought carrots and I brought pistachios. I figured it's a little early for chocolate, but I can't trust me, but I have something probably that'll be just as much of a treat, which is we might leave early. So I do not feel well. Woke up in the middle of the night going, oh no, what's going to happen if I can't get there? Figured one of you can kind of lead. I'll call in by phone. But anyway, I'm not contagious because I've had this, it seems like, for about a month where I feel just like I'm about to get really sick and then I don't. But just enough to feel weird. So I know a couple other people have the same thing. So anyway, I might be a little fuzzy-headed going through things, but I figured meditation will help me feel better. So we'll do what we can do. Nobody's here for the very first time ever, right? Okay. Any questions before I kind of prep us for today? Yeah.
And at the beginning, it was very easy to focus on my breathing and forget about the rest. Now it's even more difficult.
Huh.
That, which is kind of funny. And the second thing is that it's difficult to make a habit of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that you don't have the time. And you do have the time.
Right. Right, because we have so many other habits that are getting in the way. And, yeah, you want to add something to that? Do we need a mic or people watching this at home? Okay, all right, so I'll repeat some of those questions. I need to get a tissue.
Herman, I think possibly on the first issue you might be trying too hard. One of the readings that we were assigned, I think it was Lama Yeshe talked about that. He addressed when you get to a certain point, you know, after you've been in the beginner stage and you move on, you can start to encounter resistance, and it's usually because you're trying too hard. You see, back off. He said, "What is it? Let go," something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Well, yeah.
I hope this isn't inappropriate or sacrilegious. I found something on the internet that I found extremely helpful. There's a site called Headspace. Have any of you seen that? Headspace.
Headspace.
Headspace.com, I guess. And there was an article in the NNO a couple of weeks ago in the Parade magazine about meditation in general.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't mention Buddhism, but it was talking about the value of meditation and so forth. And it mentioned this Headspace site. It is guided meditation. It's a very calm voice with a British accent. And apparently they have hundreds of guided meditations on there. They give you the first 10 days for free, and I've done five or six of them.
Hmm.
And a calm voice comes on, just like ours, talking about relaxing the body, counting your breaths, and so on. Then it's quiet for a while, then it comes back on, and says, now that you're relaxed, you can think about anything you want for the next few minutes, that sort of thing. I think if you want to subscribe after the first 10 days, it's something like $8 a month.
Hmm.
But what I found was having a voice, having a guided meditation. Now, again, I hope it's not inappropriate. What I've started doing is adding, before I punch the button on the computer, I add the motivation at the first, and when it's over, the dedication at the last.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can put in a prayer if I choose.
Sure, yeah.
But the having the voice there, telling me to relax, telling me to count my, it's extremely helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's guided visualizations. Having that voice, whether it's something like that or you record something ahead of time, it's kind of like training wheels. It's helping you get into that habit, perhaps. And when I don't know if whoever's listening at home, one of the questions was, you know, that it's hard to get into the habit of it. And so we talked once before about how, you know, like if I'm trying to, this seriously happens to me, if I'm trying to write some poetry or short stories, which I enjoy writing, part of me resists it. It's I find everything else to do. Oh, I got to make that call. You know, and once I'm doing it, I'm enjoying it. But if there's such different sides of the brain that I'm using, so even from like the scientific point of view, that you're using these hugely different sides of the brain, that sometimes it's helpful to do a ritual or something to shift, because the side that you're leaving is going to do everything it can to keep you. Even just our habits that want to have that attention are going to kind of flare up so that we don't shift our attention away to something else. So that's why when people have like a regular day and time that they're always doing it, you know, that starts to dig a whole new habit and it creates its own little energy. So if every morning at 7 I'm doing something, doing some meditation and prayers, then that starts to create even that way of operating in my mind, in my life. So it is about shifting habits and anything that helps start to create that, whether it's this website or other things, great. And I also think that the more you develop your ability to meditate, then the more you'll start to notice when your mind is wandering. So you're now noticing that. Also, like with anything, you're going to hit obstacles that kind of challenge you along the way. Now that, you know, if you had a really easy time in the beginning of your meditations and now you're struggling with these things, it might be that you're more aware of them. It might be that they're kind of flaring up to, the mind is slippery, you know, the mind is really a slippery little thing. Okay. So, any other questions before we get started? Yeah. Well, you're going to get your work out.
A question about Lama Yeshe's writings, the reading that we read. You know, he used the word superstition a lot, and you may have covered it in a class I was missing.
Probably
one
not.
Class. So, and it seemed to be used in a lot of different ways.
Right.
Covered a lot of ground, all of which I was unfamiliar with.
Right. So I remember asking Geshe-la the very same question. He's saying that the Tibetans use the term superstitious differently. We just think of it like, you know, the number 13 and walking under a ladder. But they're using it with anything that's kind of mental projection. And the mind projecting something onto something. So I wouldn't know exactly which sentences, but anytime you see that, that's how they're using it. Mm-hmm. Right. Anything the mind is making up and projecting onto something and over-exaggerating something is definitely what they are saying. It, at least in the older writings like that, that they're using superstition. Superstitious. Yeah. Good question. So in most of the... Today, let me just give you an idea of what we're going to do. We're going to spend a little bit of time just kind of settling in and getting our motivation and doing some 9-round breathing meditation. And then we'll do a visualization. So, you know, you're going to warm up. I will guide you through a visualization. And we haven't done any like this before, so I thought we'd spend some time today doing it. It's going to be a meditation on Shakyamuni Buddha. Since this is Discovering Buddhism, to do one on Shakyamuni Buddha. And so I'll lead us through that. And we'll take breaks all along the way. And then in the next big chunk of meditation will be more of on a focus meditation. So if you brought in an object, you'll use that. If you didn't, then you use your breathing. And we'll do that in short spurts of like 5 to 10 minutes of that and then take a 5 to 10 minute break and then come back so that we have that practice rather than just sitting for 30 minutes trying to do it. And in each meditation, usually there's the kind of 3 stages, kind of prepping, you know, getting your posture ready and whatever, and then setting your motivation and then actually the body of the meditation. So you'll see, because I'll be leading us through that today. And when we talk about meditation, so I remember this woman in here asked a great question, like, can we start with ourselves? Can we just have our motivation about ourselves and the people that we know? And Absolutely. I mean, that's the way I always start. It was start with yourself and then think about how that's going to affect the people you know around you when you achieve those goals. And then an altruistic motivation is even including the people that you don't know or the people you don't like. You're just including more and more people. So we try to raise our motivation to the highest level possible. And so you'll hear in Buddhism, we talk a lot about, you know, that setting our motivation so that we can become enlightened, not just ourselves enlightened, but enlightened so that we can help others. And an analogy that always helps me, because it's got to be practical, right? It's got to make sense. And sometimes we hear these words, and because it's not hitting us, it just kind of comes in and out, at least for me. You know, I have to make it real tangible and juicy. And so one that is easy for me, one way of thinking of it that's easy for me is using this analogy of prison. So if I was in prison, I used to do some work in prison, in a women's prison, teaching writing, and I would dream that I was in prison all the time. I was like stuck there. And in the prison, the different color shirts that shows if you're a misdemeanant, then you wear green. If you're a felon, you wear blue. If you're on death row, you wear yellow. If you're brand new, then you wear brown. If you have mental health issues, you always wear brown. It's really, I heard that it dated from the time where if somebody's trying to escape, the officers can shoot, and they're only going to shoot blue shirts. But I don't know. That was the myth in the prison. Anyway, so I would have these dreams, and I'd come back to the prison and say, I dreamt I was here. I was living with you all. And they were, what color was your shirt? Like, at least it wasn't yellow. So anyway, it was very easy for me to imagine that I was there. And so something like that, if that's easy for you to imagine, you watch these prison movies, what it would be like to be in prison, then you can easily generate the wish to get out, right? Prisoners don't have to wake up every morning and go, oh, okay, let's see, would I like to get out of prison? I mean, it's just, as soon as they wake up, they know, they wish they weren't there, right? It's that kind of instant feeling. So they would want to get out. Then imagine that you've been there a while. You have friends there now. You know, you've got really close people there. You wouldn't want anybody, even some of your worst enemies, you would not want them to suffer what you'd been through in that prison. You would also want them to get out. And so if you had the ability to get out, if you were like connected somehow and you could figure out some way to get out of that prison, the highest motivation is that you would get out so that you could get everybody else out. I know there's tons of prison movies about that, right? And think of like Harriet Tubman, who created the Underground Railroad and did get hundreds of people out of slavery. That kind of wish. She was able to get free. She couldn't rest with just that, right? So when we talk today about, I'm going to ask you several times, like check your motivation and work with your motivation. Go to some analogy like that you can use easily. Call to mind about why you're looking for the escape route. You're looking for the escape route. You know why you want to get out of samsara. You know why you want to get out. Now you would get out in order to create that same trail for everybody else. Okay, and the other thing to think about, how many people have seen Groundhog Day or something? So, you know, over and over and over and over again until really there's almost this altruistic intention of the way he's walking through that day, right? I can't read the rest of my writing. Okay. Or at a minimum, if all those things kind of are like, I don't really get that, at a minimum, just stay open to seeing what happens today and how you work with your motivation. At least stay open to that. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with the 9-round breathing meditation, and then we're going to set our motivation. And if you have these gold books, then I can't remember what page the Four Immeasurables is on, but let's find that so you can have it at your ready. I think it's like page 30 something. Yeah, 34. Let's check that. 34. And I've done it a couple different ways in this class. One time I read it and you meditated on it. Another time we all read it together. So whichever way resonates more for you, feel free to just keep your eyes closed while some of us read it. But right now let's do the 9-round breathing meditation. First check your posture. So if you're sitting in a chair, make sure your feet are flat on the floor, facing forward, kind of hip width apart. And the most important thing is that your back is straight, so in chairs, but certainly on the floor, you have a cushion there so that your hips are higher than your knees. And then you put your left hand a little bit below your navel. Your right hand goes on top so that your thumbs just barely touch. And your arms are out away from your body. So you can take nice deep breaths. Tuck your chin a bit so that the top of your spine is straight as well. Close your eyes gently or leave a little bit open so there's some light that comes in and keeps you alert. Place your tongue at the back of your front teeth. Okay, and so then with the 9-round breathing meditation, you're going to take one of your right fingers, place it on your left nostril and breathe in through your right nostril and out through your left nostril 3 times. And then you're going to switch hands and place your left finger on your right nostril and breathe in through your left, out through your right 3 times. And then finally with both nostrils. And we're going to do like 3 rounds of that. And you can use the visualization of you breathing in clear, perfect, enlightened energy. It fills every cell of your body. And then you're exhaling all the negativities in the form of black smoke that completely leaves the environment. Now, you can do the first exhalation of anything that you're attached to that's getting in your way. All the attachment that's gotten in your way this lifetime, countless lifetimes. The second thing you'd be exhaling would be anger. All the problems that anger has created in your lifetime, this lifetime, and countless others. And then the last one would be ignorance. All the things that you've done because you didn't know, because we don't know everything. All the not knowing, exhaling. If that's too much, you can just do that visualization with the smoke. Like if you're not feeling well, then you can exhale all of your ill feelings and breathe in clear light. Okay? So then just at your own timing, and then I'll ring this bell after we've done about 3. So now think about your motivation for being here today. You've been attending this class or meditating on your own, and what your personal hope is as you meditate, how this will change yourself, your life, your mind. And then you think about how it will change your life and your mind. Think about how that affects the people that you know around you, at work, at home, in the community, in the stores. And then knowing that one thing leads to another, just like when you learn the alphabet, you might not have had the knowledge or motivation that you would one day be reading things about meditation. Learning the alphabet led you all the way here. So knowing that learning meditation can lead to things you might not even be able to see at this point, but trying to increase your motivation to include that possibility. That familiarizing yourself with positive mind states can lead to the ultimate of all positive mind states, enlightenment. And how wonderful it would be if everyone could achieve that state as well. And as you achieve it, you're showing others exactly how to do it. So now we'll say the four immeasurables, stopping between each line to think about them a little bit. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now just check your posture again. We're going to just follow our breath for 5 minutes, kind of settling our mind down as thoughts arise. Bring your awareness that, this is a thought trying to grab my attention. Without judgment, without excitement, just bring your mind back to your count as gently as you would a young child. You can count to 5 or you can count to 10, whatever count works best for your mind. Kind of warming up those focus muscles. So we haven't meditated in the daytime before together. Did it feel different? Is it harder or easier or about the same? Same? Anybody else? Same?
Harder?
Okay. let's take a quick bathroom break and come back here in about 5 minutes. There's carrots out there. I'll look for chocolate. And there's pistachios. I'll look for some chocolate.
I had better than chocolate before. Can
you tell me, a friend of mine from Nepal gave me this, and I've been using it for my...
Yeah, chocolate.
Okay.
And this is the... They have different conditions they sit
yeah.
in.
Yeah. At first I thought it was Tara, but there's no leg over the edge.
Right.
So
that's like a begging bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And it's full.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is him touching the ground. So if you ever saw Little Buddha, where there's one great scene where they reenact the Buddha's life.
Mm-hmm.
And right before he becomes enlightened, he's being kind of tempted with all these different delusions, and he touches the ground. And that kind of grounds him in one way, that's to ground him. That's also kind of, I don't know if I'm telling you exactly right, but that hand mudra you'll see on a lot of the, see on this sangha?
Mm-hmm.
That's him also. He's holding the begging bowl and touching the ground, which kind of, I think, he, one way kind of brings enlightenment here, but it was also a way of him.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
I'm here. Yeah.
It's really nice.
Where'd
you get it?
A friend from Nepal gave it to me a few years ago.
Oh.
Actually, when it came, it had one of those little tags. You know, things from Nepal have a tag on them to show they're not a an artifact, an ancient anything to get them out of Nepal.
Okay, so that means...
There's something in there.
Usually it's stuffed with prayers.
Yeah.
And so... Next time, if they're doing one at the center, you could ask Eshwar to fill it, because that might, even though it's sealed, it looks like it's empty, it sounds like it's empty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's nice, she's already got a bottom.
You got a bottom?
Mm-hmm.
So then what, they're doing statues filling?
They're going to be doing that. It's coming up.
Yeah.
You should bring up Sarah's books.
Okay.
I forget whether it's FBC or something. You know Sarah?
I probably met her.
But she's overseeing it.
Okay.
She don't.
What they'll do is they'll
take me grab.
Okay.
So really the idea is to visualize this.
Yes, that's what I've been.
Buddha.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing. And okay.
And you know they'll take these little mantras, these prayers, and hold them, and then they put different ones in the head. It'll be filled.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure this would pop right off.
Yeah. They'll take care of all that. And then they'll seal it for you. It's really nice.
That's
you're
great.
You're good to go.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm glad you have one.
I just have a couple of short announcements. The Grand
Sillion
completion card.
Okay. Right.
And then that will be one of them. But they need to bring the cards back to each.
Okay. And what are they doing right now?
They hold on to it for 2 years.
Okay.
That's their goal.
Okay.
And then I'll just make an announcement about the next module.
Okay. All right. That sounds good.
Okay. Thank you.
I didn't get the theory that's going around. Instead, I have this weird, well, I don't know what it is. I'm glad it's not, I'm glad I don't have a fever. Yeah. I don't know, do my eyes look real red? Yeah. Well,
that's how I know it's my allergy.
I'm, you know, this is definitely not allergy, but I mean, I have, I always have a dry eye, and one of my eyes is always red. That's why I like to sit with these lights on, because the lights bother me. Oh, yeah, I just have a restless mind, I don't do well.
Okay. Ding, 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 ding. So I see a lot of you have notebooks or papers, so if you want to jot down notes of how things that you might remember about what worked or didn't work or something about a meditation, you know, sometimes we think of things or we realize a certain thing, then we forget it really quickly. So if you want to take notes, yeah.
Did you meditate during the module? Did you meditate on precious human rebirth?
Right. Oh. I mean, I kind of squeezed it in, but in one, you can go ahead and say. God, what's today? Does it need a date on there? That sounds good.
Okay.
1/5, everybody. I squeezed it kind of in. I don't even know what's on y'all's completion card. Are there anything on those cards that I haven't done?
Today.
No. Oh, just today. Just today. We're doing today. Yeah.
You added some that aren't on here. Equanimity.
There we go. We got.
Twice.
Okay. See? You've got extra credit. Okay, so I'm going to just talk a little bit about the meditation we're heading into. It's a meditation on Shakyamuni Buddha, in case that's on your completion card. Oh, okay, good. Glad I'm covering that one then. Let's see. So later on in Deep Discovering Buddhism, you're going to learn a lot about karma and, you know, creating, I'm just going to give this two little sentence blurb about it now, is that, you know, everything we do with our body, speech, and mind is creating seeds. It's like we're walking on fresh sand, right? And so by meditating on Shakyamuni Buddha, we are, you could say, you're creating the causes to be able to continue to do this practice, to be able to see Buddhas at some point, to feel that connection, all those kinds of things. So that's one of the real benefits of this meditation. We've created the past seeds so that we now in this lifetime are able to see all these Buddhas on the altar, right? That's the whole reason of having the statues and the paintings, is so that if we're not able to see an actual Buddha, and maybe we are, maybe we do, people we don't know, but we have the ability to be able to see those representations of them. And even that is amazing, because if we were born as an animal, we wouldn't be recognizing that, right? So we have created incredible ability to see certain things, and then to be able to meditate on them creates the conditions so that we could actually be walking among them one day, all right? Kind of, that's the best I can get in under 2 minutes. And so then what I'm going to do with this meditation is walk you through exactly what you'd see at one point. And you're going to be asking the Buddha for help. And when I use the word blessings, I mean, if many of you have heard Geshe-la define blessings as that which changes your mind, Okay, it has to be your mind joining with something for it to change. Nobody from the outside can just come and rearrange your mind. So when asking the Buddha for blessings, you're asking that your mind can become like his, right? That your mind can become enlightened, that you can connect to that and learn as much as you can so that your mind can become changed. And then there'll be some visualizations I'll do where you're receiving all this kind of light streaming through your body, and the first time with that will be of a purification. And I'll walk you through all of that, so you don't have to worry. And the second time, you'll be the light coming to you, you'll receive the qualities. So first, you kind of clean it out, like when we exhale all that smoke, and then you're inhaling all this pure white light. It's the same kind of concept. And then at one point, I'll ask us all to say Buddha Shakyamuni's mantra. And this is it. It's Tayata Om Muni Muni Maha Muniye Soha. And I can kind of sing it for you. You can sing along with me because it's real easy that way. And I remember when I was first taking some of these classes, it just was, why would I say that? You know, I remember this one teacher gave me a really good answer because I was a really bad student. I was just always asking 3 million questions. None of the answers were good enough for me. And I just drove everyone crazy. But this one teacher said, you know, it's kind of like, imagine so Shakyamuni Buddha walking. Okay, this is what I came up with in my mind. Why do people drive all the way across country so they can sit in a chair that Abraham Lincoln sat in? Why? They feel something when they do that, because it's like, wow, Abraham Lincoln sat in this chair, now I get to sit in this chair. So saying a mantra is the same thing as that, is that this, it's as though you're walking in his footsteps. Right? So these are the words that he said at one point. Now you're saying them in that exact language. It's that same kind of as like sitting in Abraham Lincoln's chair, but times 5 million. Oh gosh, that's a whole other class. But like, okay, so that's a very good question. I don't have it right here. I see somebody's Googling it.
I looked it up before and I can't remember.
Okay, so I know, like, Brian, did you have your hand up? Oh. So Tayata, I believe Tayata is like gone before, so when we'll find out for in a minute. Tayata is those who've gone completely past samsara, right? Om is like a really precious syllable. Om is the sounds of a, um, ma, which means kind of enlightened body, speech, and mind. Tayata, om. I know maha is great. And this kind of like it's saying like his name, because Shakyamuni, so he was the from that place, Muni. So I'm probably getting this all wrong. It'll be easy to look up. The main point of it is that this is like saying his name in some ways, and walking in his footsteps. So it's kind of bringing that same kind of energy and power. Yeah. Buddha, medicine Buddha?
Mantra for the green Tara?
Tara,
when I'm saying those mantras, is it walking in their footsteps?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. You're aligning them with that energy and that power. And they each have kind of, you know, different qualities. Right? And so, yeah, when you say medicine Buddha mantra, it's as though that's what kind of gave me the chills when this one teacher said, it's like, that's the words that he said or she said, right? Now you're saying those as well, and you're lining up right with them and walking in their footsteps, sitting in their chair. Does that make sense?
It's kind of like a greeting.
The whole mantra?
I'll share what the interweb says. According to this website, the mantra is a play on the Shakyamuni Buddha's name. Muni means sage and Maha means great. So this translation says, Om, wise one, greatly wise one of the Shakyans, hail. So
hail. Soha means, you'll say a lot of times soha will be at the end of something, kind of like word. You know? Right? Yeah. Oh, okay, great. Thank you. Well, can you read it? My eyes are not doing well tonight.
This
translation is from, this is Lama Zopa Rinpoche's interpretation of the mantra. Tayata, it is like this. Om, the all-knowledge of the three bodies of the Buddha and of the infinite Buddha's holy body, speech, and mind. The knowledge of the two paths to enlightenment, method and wisdom, and of the two truths, absolute and relative, that contain all existence within them. Muni, control over the suffering of the three lower realms and over the wrong conception of self, of the self-existent I. Muni, control over the suffering of all samsara and over self-cherishing thoughts. Mahamuniye, great control over the suffering of subtle illusions and over the dualistic mind. Soha, may my mind receive, absorb, and keep the blessings of the mantra, and may they take root.
Word. So, and you'll see. Well, and Lama Zopa Rinpoche will give you the most, you know, the biggest bang for your buck. So, like, if you're looking up other mantras in the future, Alexander Berzin's website, you know, always look for Lama Zopa Rinpoche, but if you can't find it, Alexander Berzin, B-E-R-Z-I-N, has a huge database of information. And, a lot of them will say it's pretty much a play on the different names. Om Tari Tutari Turi Soha. You know, they almost all end with Soha, and then there's something about the name in the mantra. And, the main thing again is, you know, you're connecting through saying it, your speech with this being who you're trying to make some connection with, right? So the three gates, our body, our speech, and our mind, we're trying to do something with each of them. When we're praying, you know, we're saying something out loud and trying to connect our mind to what we're saying, prostrations or walking around the stupa, something physical. And so this meditation, we're using our mind and then we're saying something to try to make that kind of a connection so we can sit in that chair. So we can get there. Okay, so get in the posture, check your posture, and and when you, if you know, don't worry if you can't see exactly what I'm describing. A lot of people get hung up like, I didn't see it that way. It's okay. Try more to feel something as though Shakyamuni Buddha is sitting in front of you. You know, try to generate that feeling as I walk through this. And, you know, if you're struggling, then don't get down on yourself. Just know, okay, well, this was my first time through it. I'm going to keep going with this. It's an introduction. So, you know, no judgment. And now just check again your motivation. You know, at minimum, it's an open-minded curiosity. So that your mind can improve. And become completely enlightened. And now just take a minute to count your breaths to three. Just the feeling of the breath coming in and out. Letting all the thoughts settle down. Like waves on the ocean. When distractions arise, just be aware of them without getting involved. And then bring your mind gently back to your breath. And then take a moment to look at your motivation again, trying to create an altruistic motivation for this meditation. That you're meditating not just for your own individual intellectual benefit, but you're taking time now to meditate, to develop your mind to reach a state that can actually benefit all beings. And that as you do this with your motivation, imagine that seated around you are your friends and family. and it's seated around them are all sentient beings, as far as you can see, in the human form. So even beings, invisible beings, animal beings, they've all taken human form and are completely surrounded you. And just like you, they wish for happiness. They wish for peace of mind. They wish to avoid any kind of suffering. And just like you, all these beings suffer in some kind of way. They're all here with us in samsara, which can be viewed as a prison cell. So that feel that you are doing this meditation for yourself, but also on behalf of all of these beings. And then visualize in front of you, at the level of your forehead, about 6 to 8 feet in front of you, is Buddha Shakyamuni. He is made of light, very bright and clear, transparent light, like a hologram. There's a large golden throne made of light. On the throne is a white lotus. On the lotus is a cushion of sunlight. And on that cushion is a cushion of moonlight. These represent the three principles of the path. The lotus represents renunciation. The sun cushion represents the wisdom realizing emptiness. And the moon cushion represents bodhicitta. Seated on the throne facing you is Shakyamuni Buddha. His holy body is the color of fine gold made of light. He is wearing the saffron robes of a monk and is sitting in the full lotus position. The palm of his right hand rests on his right knee, with his fingers touching the moon cushion, signifying his great control over all delusions. His left hand is in his lap in the posture of meditative concentration and holds a begging bowl filled with nectar, which represents the medicine which can cure all of our delusions. The Buddha's face is very beautiful and peaceful. He smiles at you with eyes filled with love and compassion, like something you've never seen before. So beautiful. He has blue-black hair and a crown protrusion. Feel very strongly that you are in the presence of an enlightened being who understands and accepts you just as you are, and who strongly wishes to help you to reach his state of enlightenment. Visualize that rays of light are emanating from each pore of Buddha's holy body, reaching the entire universe. The rays are actually composed of countless miniature Buddhas, some going out to help living beings, some dissolving back into his body, having completed their work. The rays of light touching everywhere. Develop an attitude of taking refuge in the Buddha's enlightened qualities, recognizing that applying the medicine of the Buddha's teaching, that by applying the medicine, we can become enlightened ourselves. Make a request from your heart to the Buddha for his blessings that you can become free of all negative energy, misconceptions, problems, and that you can develop all the realizations of the path to enlightenment. Feel that your request has been granted, and a stream of purifying white light flows from the Buddha's heart and enters your body to the crown of your head. Feel that all your negativities have been dispelled completely, and that you are now filled with blissful, clear light. And now we'll say the Buddha's mantra three times. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Muneye Soha. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Muneye Soha. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha. Now make a strong request to the Buddha for his blessings that you can develop all his enlightened qualities for the benefit of all beings, including yourself. Feel that your request has been granted and visualize a stream of golden light flowing from the Buddha's heart, entering your crown chakra, the top of your head, and bringing all the qualities of enlightened body, speech, and mind in the form of this golden light. Imagine that your body is completely filled with this golden light and that you feel great bliss. Recite the mantra three more times. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Muneye Soha. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Muneye Soha. Tayata Om Mune Mune visualize the Buddha Shakyamuni comes to the crown of your head, facing the same direction as you. Then focus on all beings visualized sitting around you and generate great love and compassion for them. As you generate this love and compassion, recite the Buddha's mantra and imagine the rays of light in the nature of wisdom and compassion radiate out from the Buddha's heart to all beings, bringing them all the qualities of enlightened body, speech, and mind. Feel very strongly that all their negativities are purified and that they themselves become perfectly enlightened, experiencing great bliss. So we'll say the mantra three more times. Taya ta om mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta om mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta visualize that the Buddha melts into pure golden light, which absorbs into you. Imagine your ordinary concept of yourself dissolves, and you become one union with the enlightened body, speech, and mind. One with the Buddha's blissful, omniscient mind in the aspect of vast, empty space. Rest in that blissful space as long as you can before distractions arise. So again, imagining that the Buddha's body melts into pure golden light, which absorbs into you. And as it absorbs into you, your ordinary concept of yourself, your limitations, your abilities, your lack of abilities, all that dissolves. And you and this enlightened body, speech, and mind become the same thing. Blissful, omniscient, vast. We'll just take 5 minutes to try to rest in that knowledge. You can refresh this over and over again, letting distractions just melt around you. And finally, take a minute to rejoice in having done this meditation. Just means to be pleased. To be pleased that you spent this time doing this meditation that created the cause to be able to enlighten yourself and others. And you can dedicate the virtue that you just created from doing this meditation towards attaining that perfect state. Questions about that meditation or comments, or it's very different than what we've done before? Was it distracting to hear the voice continuing to do? No? Okay. Sometimes for me, I'll be kind of in a groove with something and then the voice wants me to, you know, I'm really, and that's the benefit of doing it at home is when you feel something, then stay in one place as long as you can. If you're really feeling those lights coming to you or the purification part, whatever it is, then just, that's when that focus muscle comes into play. And if you haven't developed that focus muscle, you'll notice when I'm saying just rest in a state, it's really hard because you're just all. But the more focus you have, the more you'll be able to do that. Speaking of focus, that's what's up next. Yeah, you have a question? We're going to get you this mic so that our person at home can hear.
When somebody guides me through it, I can let my mind relax and just be with the sensing part.
Right.
Whereas if I have to do it myself, there's this part of me that's, you know, trying to keep things in order. And
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. And I know that Geshe has told me when there's been certain things I'm trying to learn, he said, in the, you know, kind of memorize the outline. I mean, in the beginning, you'll just either have to tape it so you can hear it to yourself or go to a website that has it. But say you wanted to do this particular meditation again. You can either read parts and then try to do it, or you can tape it. And then you would, you know, you can memorize certain parts of it. So that then you would say, you know, like, it'll become second nature eventually, but then you can say, okay, now there's a throne, and on the throne is this cushion, and then the Buddha looks like this, and then I'm asking for this, and this white light is coming, and then this is happening, then you say the mantra. So then you would kind of memorize the order, and pretty soon you'd be able to do it. Like right now, if I told you to visualize your house, walking in the front door, you wouldn't need me to do that for very long because you know, I don't know your house. But you would be able to do that no matter where you were. And so soon it will become like that, that you will know the sections of that meditation and what it looks like. But it takes practice, you know, and so that's why having it read to you in the beginning really, really helps. And in that book, I mean, she has the same one, just a little bit different, in that How to Meditate book that I've been talking about, that same meditation is in there. So you could read it into probably even an app on your phone. And then, right? I don't even know. But I'm sure there's an app on your phone you can tape it into and then hear it back. And so that would then get you in the habit of what each of those stages are. Yeah.
Can you repeat what those three, the eight things symbolize?
Sure. Yeah, and you'll see, you know, they're in the drawings. But so the first one is the lotus, and that represents renunciation. And then the second one is the sun disk, and that represents wisdom realizing emptiness. And the third one is the moon disk, and that represents bodhicitta. And so in Mahayana Buddhism, all three are needed to be completely enlightened. So then that's what Buddha is sitting on top of all of those. And during DB, you'll be talking a lot about what's renunciation, what is wisdom realizing emptiness, and what is bodhicitta. Yeah.
Sorry.
So I'm okay with focused meditations and with those guided imagery like what you did, and I can even, you know, produce a picture like what you're talking about. Where I have problems is when it's an open-ended, you know, like meditate on compassion or meditate mm-hmm. on suffering or something like that, poverty, for example.
Right.
So do you have any tips for that?
Yeah, and I mean, again, in that book, she'll talk about like meditating on compassion. There'll be kind of a structure to it, you know. And first, I would have to know why. Why am I going to meditate on suffering? And know what the goal of the meditation is. Right. So first, I'd really think about what's the goal of this meditation. You know, meditating on suffering might be helping me recognize that this is a prison, because our prison looks pretty good, you know, compared to other people's prisons. So, we get so tricked by our suffering. We're just basically rearranging the room and going, okay, now it looks good. I can live with this, rather than trying to get out. So meditating on suffering, the point would be to remind myself what this is so that I can generate the wish to get out, right? And so I would need to start with the reason I'm doing this. And then usually any kind of meditation on a topic is going to have points to meditate on. So meditating on a perfect human rebirth, we can kind of do it generally, which is what I did in that fast version, which is like, I have a human body that's functioning, you know, I have a mind that can think. I'm living in a place that's not being bombed every minute. I have enough money to be able to take a weekend off. You know, all those things, right? I've been exposed to these teachings. Not only that, I'm living in a place where there's a perfectly qualified teacher to teach me. Not only that, he lived in my house for 9 years. What's my excuse, you know? So, so all of those things to help you realize that you hit the lottery. But then there's very traditional way, and I don't have it in front of me, but meditating on the freedoms that each perfect human rebirth has, and there's 10 freedoms and 10 liberties. And so that's very traditional Buddhism. It's not just let your mind open to this, because our mind will go all over the place. And so then you go on each one, like, you know, I'm living in some of the same things I've said, and then you go through each one. Meditating on patience, it's the same thing. You look at the 5 faults of losing your patience, you know, and so you go through each one. And it's kind of more of like a review meditation. Yeah. Anything else? Okay, so it's 10:22. I say we take like an 8-minute break and come back here at 10:30. And we're going to start doing some focus meditation. We're going to do it in chunks. So have these 5-minute chunks felt too short or too long or just right? Just okay, you need a little more? Okay, because what we're going to do is we're going to start with 5 and then try to add a little bit on. We're going to do 5 and then maybe stand up, walk around, then 5, stand up, walk around, 8, and do like that. And you'll be able to take note on how especially if you brought something to visualize, any difference that you've noticed. So when I took myself away once for like 4 or 5 days, and I would try to do these focused meditations, and I would just jot down notes from each session, you know, and just try to see any kind of pattern, or just also helping me rejoice, because I would only remember the bad ones, you know. Okay, so 8-minute break. Okay, everyone ready? I think they can hear this out there. Is everybody warm enough? Okay, it's a little chilly. Yeah, I'll turn up a little bit, not too much, because then you'll fall asleep. Yeah, I think, how much, what is it set at now? 69, yeah. Okay. I think this is the same, right? They are individual? Well, it says it's 68, but it was set at 60.
Are you too hot or too cold?
Too cold. Well, I'm always confused by this. This says 68, but the side one said, I mean, the little one on the side said 60. But now, and I moved it up to, I just moved that up, but.
So that's the one you want to.
Okay.
This is what it is.
Okay, great. Okay, so we turn it up a little bit. How many people have something they brought in to meditate on, an object? Okay, okay. So if you didn't, then you'll be using your breath, which is fine. It's not, like I said before, it's not as immediate. You'll see when you're visualizing on an object, your mind waver and not get it and all of that. So for those of you who have objects, I just want to review. If you're struggling with sleepiness, then like in your mind, shine a big bright light on that object. You can raise the object up in your mind a little bit so that your eyes will actually look up, keep you more alert. Yeah.
I've got a couple of pictures of the Dalai Lama, somebody needs them.
Okay, yeah, you can use anything. If you haven't and you would like to try using an image today, then go ahead and, you know, pick something in the room. Just know that if you're going to consistently do it, you need to stick with one thing. So you'd want to have one thing that you would be able to use regularly. This picture of his Dalai Lama, I've had this for a long time. I was worrying I'm going to lose it because I don't have it. It comes and goes. So now, if you're using an object, you might take note of how it changes over the course of the day, or like if you're like me, in the very beginning it's crystal clear and then it's completely faded. If I give up too soon, I'm kind of surprised that if I stick with it just a little bit longer, it comes back into view. So it goes through these different kind of cycles, and that's why you might not notice something in 5 minutes that you would have noticed in 8 minutes. But it's also important not to stay too long and get frustrated. I just want to say while we're doing this, if you want to get up and leave or move or go to the bathroom or come back, that's fine. We have to work with our minds. If you're moving or coughing or whatever, that's fine. We need to kind of watch our minds in that. If you are uncomfortable, like if you're counting and you notice that your thoughts are getting agitated, like, oh, I wish this was over. Why isn't it 5 minutes yet? But here's what I would suggest is you're not going to try not to follow that thought, but also if you try to squish that thought, it's going to bite you pretty quickly. It's just going to get bigger. So what I try to do is kind of just give it some room, not room to keep talking, but I just like put that thought like in the middle of the ocean or in the middle of a field and let it have it becomes really small then, if that makes sense. It's really hard to put into words some of these things, but we're trying to like give certain things space, not so we can follow it, but not so that it's, you know, when you tighten around something, it just makes it worse. So if it's discomfort or fatigue or this voice of like, why are we doing this? Try to like create more space around that and you might be surprised what happens. Any questions before we start? Okay, so I'll ding this bell after 5 minutes, and since What I'd like to do right after that is we'll do a little brief walking meditation for 5 minutes and then sit down and do focus again rather than taking a break because we just took a long break. So when we do walking meditation, just we'll walk in a circle and I'll move the cushions. We'll walk around these cushions like this. Okay, I'll move this desk back a little bit. And we're going to do, this is more of a Zen tradition, but it'll just give us a break and do something different. And we'll walk very slowly, and you're just trying to be incredibly mindful of every little sensation, thought, anything that's coming into your awareness. And then after 5 minutes of that, we'll sit down and do 5 more minutes of focus, and then we'll take a break and talk about it. Okay? All right. So check your posture. If you have an object, then you might want to take a good look at it right before you close your eyes. Okay, and then just double check your motivation. Kind of refresh your motivation. Remembering what a focused mental state can do and bring to your meditations in general. Okay, and then begin if you're counting your breath. Just begin with that. If you're focusing, then you begin trying to bring the object to mind. here. Meditative posture. And 5 more minutes of focus meditation. Gotta refresh your motivation. And I'll ring the bell in 5 minutes. How's it going? Everybody's awake. For those of you doing breathing meditation, how's that going? Is it going well? Okay. How about focus on an object? Do you notice how hard it is to get that image and it's
easier when I was walking to see my image.
Well, that's always the way it is. You know, I will see other images really crystal clear. I saw those pictures, you know, those other pictures of the Dalai Lama. Perfect. It's just your mind playing games, and you'll find that sometimes if you back off a little bit, or I'll tell myself, okay, as soon as you can get a clear image of this, you can get off the cushion. Oh, bing, you know. So then you just work with it. You just play with it. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, so in the beginning, she said that she keeps seeing the background of the image. So, yeah, I had a lot of trouble with that in the beginning. So sometimes it is helpful to see a neutral, put it like on a neutral, like against a wall and look at it. Again, it's your mind trying to, if you were trying to look at the background, then you would see the picture. It's just, but it's instant biofeedback, yeah.
Does it help to look at the image
as
like a hologram?
Like made of light? Could be. Could be. Try it. You want it to be identical to what you're seeing. You don't want it to elaborate on it. So in a visualization, you kind of elaborate and let things be all kind of out there. But with this, you're trying to keep your mind exactly. And I remember Geshe-la saying, okay, it should be as crystal clear as though it's about to talk. So I thought he meant like when I was looking at it. So I said, oh, I did that today. And he was all excited. I said, really? I said, yeah, I was looking at it and it really, you know, it looked like it could talk. Really, to me, that was still an accomplishment with my eyeballs, you know, to see it that clearly. But you want it to be just as though you had your eyes open. So it helps me to brighten it. So sometimes I will stare at it under a bright light first, and then you want the image to be like equal with your forehead. So in your mind's eye, when you're trying to bring it up again, that's where it should be. Yeah. Well, really, almost any count is okay, but typically it's like 10. But I also find going to five helps a lot, because sometimes then I'll get lost along the way. So five, a shorter count can help. For those of you who are counting, do you feel like you're able to keep your mind on the count, or is it like one? Oh yeah, and then when I get home, I'm going to do this two, and then I'm going to. Is it kind of you're on the count, but you're thinking of other things too? I'm really good at that. I can keep the count and have another conversation going on all at the same time, which is why I need an object to focus on. But I did notice that when I went away on my own and tried to really do this focus meditation for several days, then when I came back and did the counting meditation, it was hugely different. That the counting meditation was much more focused and sharp. So it's just that building that muscle, you know, when you practice that a lot, you'll see a big difference. Okay. How are y'all feeling? So good. Okay, yeah.
Just to clarify, so focusing on the image in my case, you're just seeing the image,
right? Is
nothing, no other visualization,
right? Yeah. So the question was, are you just seeing the image or other things? No, it really should be just the image. Now, I think. Is there anything going on for you? When, like, are you seeing other things or the background or?
To keep my mind from getting distracted, sometimes I'm doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the same sort of things that you were doing with the Buddha.
Well, if you want to keep yourself from getting distracted, see how clear it is. Because it's like, yeah, okay, there's a picture of it, but it's probably not crystal clear. Can you see exactly all the details, you know? And for a long time I had trouble with, like, okay, I can see that eye really clearly, but the rest of it's kind of foggy. Well, there's even a name for that. That's part of it along the development. So that's okay. At least you're seeing one part of it clearly. Sometimes then I would get distracted with the background, like, oh, there's a frame, and then we're in the houses. It's like if you are really looking at this photograph really intently, you don't really notice anything else anymore. You know, you're just looking at that. If your peripheral vision is strong, then you're not really seeing this. You know, like, I mean, use your eyeballs first and see what happens. But so then I think my mind can trick myself and think, yeah, I got the image there. Oh, yeah? You know, it, really? What do the glasses look like? And then I realize, oh, I don't. The glasses aren't really that clear. I'm not seeing two ears. You know, I don't know where the mouth, what the mouth is doing. Yeah, really, really check it. Watch, really look. Like, check your mind and look at it. You can stop and open your eyes and look at it again if you need to. You know, and okay, yeah, and then do it again. Five more minutes? Yeah.
I have a question. Then concentrating on an object or on your breathing, they are after exactly the same thing, right? Exercising that muscle.
Mm-hmm.
Is there another difference besides that? Between the two, I mean, between concentrating on your breathing or counting or seeing this image, do they have different purposes or
mm-hmm.
or is it basically the same thing and different roads to take to get it?
They're both in the camp of concentration meditation. Remember, I said there's either analytical or concentration. So it's definitely concentration. And when we talked about those nine stages of getting to the final state of concentration when it's just absolutely crystal clear, most people I know who are teaching on that or talking about that are using an image. I think because it's so much clearer to see your progress. I would experiment today, you know, take one of the photographs that people have and see what happens when you close your eyes and really focus on that. Yes, breathing meditation will help. So the two that they suggest to get to those ninth stage of single-pointed meditation is either focusing on the mind itself, which as Geshe-la said, that's really complicated. That's really tricky and advanced. You can certainly, once you've developed this strong muscle, do put your focus on your mind and see what that's like as a meditative, but to use that as an object is difficult. So using your breath, I'll ask Geshe-la for sure, but I just know that any time I've talked to him about developing shamatha meditation, it's always an object, I think, because it gives you such instant feedback. So anybody else who's trying this, what difference do you notice between breathing meditation and using an object?
I see very little similarity.
Oh, you see very little similarity. Okay. What do you notice when you close your eyes and look at the object? As opposed to breathing.
Actually, I find the breathing meditation much easier. Of course,
right.
The 9-point particularly, you can't think of anything else when you're doing that. But even counting breaths, whereas with the focus or with the object, my mind wanders more easily, I find, unfortunately.
You notice it. That's the thing is, your mind is wandering when you're counting, too. It's just that you don't notice it as much because it's like one, two. I mean, you're bringing your mind back all those times. And with this, you're not counting. You're really trying to keep it there, and you'll see how quickly it's hither and yon. Anybody else want to describe their... for me, I feel like I'm having to work my mind, massage my mind back to the object over and over and much more. And then when I get it, it's like, oh, wow. And the times that I've been able to really see the object really clearly, it brings like this incredible, blissful feeling that sometimes will last all day. Whereas I don't get that as much with the breathing. Yeah.
Okay, when I tried this a different time. Like a thing in my car when I was at the carpool, and it was a Z.
Uh-huh.
I was just looking at it. And so I try to do it where most of the time I was looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't closing my eyes and trying to recall it so much.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to just keep looking,
mm-hmm.
not think, and just look.
Uh-huh.
And it seemed like when I did that, then once I closed my eyes, I could see it
mm-hmm.
much faster.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was just now when I tried
right.
it, I'm trying to look, and I close my eyes and see it, and I can't see it.
Right. Well, for a couple of reasons. One, this is a new object to you. And yes, when you have your object, you need to spend a lot of time getting really familiar with it. And even as long as I've been doing this and the little progress I've made, I still, every time, I look it all over and then start. So, and it's more complicated than a D, you know. So you haven't had as much time with this object, and you've now switched, so it's brings, you know, a little bit more challenge. But you do need to become super familiar with it and then close your eyes and try to see it.
The other question that I have is, I mean, the object is not supposed to send you any message, right?
No.
Because that's the other thing that I can see.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I'm looking at a specific object, but to looking at the Dalai Lama may be sending you a completely different message for her looking at a bee.
Right, yeah. You're not supposed to start, you know, having a conversation with it, or like I've read in these books, like if you start thinking about, oh yeah, and the Dalai Lama's family, and this, no, you're supposed to be just trying to bring, you know, this image to mind. And so it does require you to just bring your mind back all the time. And then even just a few seconds of being able to see that object really clearly will be, you'll feel something so different. Yeah. Mhm.
That's a focused meditation.
Well, no, that's in a way, because what's happening, remember when I said now rest in this feeling?
Yes.
So the more you can develop the focus, the muscle, the more you'll be able to have some kind of feeling that you'll be able to saturate yourself in. If you don't have that ability to focus, then that little blip of feeling you might get would just be come and gone. Right.
Not just focusing, I was experiencing.
Yeah.
And is that still analytical, or is that, like you're saying, you're getting off track?
No, I mean, the visualization, you know, it would, it's not an analytical meditation. It falls more in the camp of focus, but I am helping you focus your mind by reading it to you, right? So if you had a really scattered mind, you wouldn't even be able to follow what I'm saying, right? So you're bringing your mind over and over to what I'm saying, and then I'm trying to let you just sit with where we've gone. I'm taking you on this journey. Now with your focus muscles, stay in that place. And the more focus you develop, then the more you'll be able to have that experience. And so Geshe was saying just yesterday, when you have what's called realizations, where it's this really complete understanding of something, it's because you're analyzing something with this focus ability. And if you don't have this focus, then that you won't be able to have that feeling that just washes over you, and now it's you've quote realized something. Okay, yeah.
Reminds me. About getting realizations, and I have friends who've had these,
mm-hmm.
and they say how awesome it is.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get out of your meditation, do you still have that realization? Do you mm-hmm. understand it?
Right.
More?
So a realization by definition would mean you wouldn't have to call it up anymore. So, for example, you know, you realize, you know, you're a woman. You don't have to call that up to your mind every day. You're like, oh, okay, let me try to remember this. What gender am I? You know, you don't have to do that. You've realized that, right? When you were little, you might not have. Yeah, it's just with you all the time. Well, you know, you have these kind of aha moments, and you have these, like, what Geshe calls them, like, 10-minute bodhicitta or something. So you could kind of realize impermanence, subtle impermanence, and then if it's not a full realization, it won't be with you all the time. It's something you have to remind yourself of. So the whole point of all of this is that the more you develop that focus muscle, then when you're analyzing something with that focus, you have the more likelihood to have this full realization that will last. Mm-hmm. That can be very much similar, and we've talked about this a little bit before. So, like the mountain climbers, you know, having put all their attention on where they're going to put that little thing in the rock and where they're going to put their foot, they can't think about anything else because they'll die. So they have that complete feeling of focusing, and a lot of artists do. And so the people even talk about that, like, I'm in the zone. You know, they're not, a basketball player's in the zone. He's not really angry at the other players, or he's just in a zone, right? Same thing at work. We can get in a zone. But And yes, the more ability you have to focus on something, the more you'll be able to turn and apply it to meditation. But there's a different experience we have when it's still just up here in our intellect, and when we have settled our body and we've gotten into a meditative state and focus. We're going to have a completely different experience than when I may be really focused driving down the street, but because I'm so busy with all those things, it's going to be hard to have some of the experiences that we're talking about. So when we do analytical meditation, you're still trying to get into this very physically meditative place so that the mind and the body can work together, and you can have... And I showed some YouTube clips about it, about how the body and the mind works together for this. So when we're at work or when we're at the gym or all these other places, there's still a lot of other stuff coming in. We're not single-pointedly focused on whatever we're doing. And so now in these places where we're physically calm, we've made our minds like a laser beam, and then we're able to put it on a topic that has the potential to transform our minds completely. That's the ingredients for enlightenment. But it certainly doesn't hurt. We can practice all day long being focused on different things, being mindful of looking at the letter D or as you're waiting in the carpool, standing in line, trying to count your breaths or reciting something. I mean, these are all perfect places to practice that focus and then bring it to your cushion and try to really, really see how focused your mind is. Okay, let's do one more, and then Joanna has some announcements, and we have completion cards, and then we're done. All right, so anybody want to try a visualization, a focused meditation? Want to pick an object just to see what it's like? Because there might be another card floating around. You want to try one? No? Okay. And are you working that object today?
Yes.
Okay, all right. And you don't see any difference between that and breathing? Yeah, okay, that's fine. Did you find this harder, the visuals?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because I don't know the object well
right.
enough yet.
Right. Yes. And it is harder. And so just be incredibly amazed at yourself if you're even able to close your eyes and see the object to some degree. That's huge. That's the first step on the path, right? So then it's all about trying to get it as clear as possible, and then this happens and that happens. But just being able to close your eyes and see the object at all is great. Okay. Okay, so 5 minutes. Check your posture. Kind of refreshing your motivation. What your mind is possible of and capable of, and that's what you're working for your mind's sake and everyone else's. And then if you're using an image, you might want to look at it again. Or if you're using your breath, then you begin to start to count. And now with your eyes still closed, take a minute to rejoice in your efforts today. It just means really to acknowledge the effort it took to come here today, to participate, to try, to share, to help. It's really huge. Keshela talks about how the merit that we create in this day and age is like 10 times what it used to be, since fewer people are engaged in this. There's more obstacles. Just think about how amazing it is that you took time on a Saturday to work on your mind, and be happy about that. And then we'll dedicate. So think of the seeds that you created by coming here today and working on your mind will have result. Nothing is lost. Everything has an effect. Everything has a result. So think about the people in your visualization who are sitting close to your family and friends. If you could share this good fortune that you just created, how would you share it with them? What would you want for them? Dedicate it to their happiness and well-being. And then how would you share it with the people that you don't know, all the other beings? And then, of course, yourself. Dedicating it to your complete enlightenment will certainly be a help to all of them. Dedicating it so that you can find the way out, that you'll hold the door open for everyone else to escape as well. I just want to thank all of you for coming, for those of you who were helping today set up, for those of you who donated money to the center, and everybody thank Brian for always taping all of this stuff, and for Glenn for running around with a microphone, and thanks for those of you at home watching. And Joanna has some things to say, and also if you have got questions about those completion cards, so I need to sign them for those of you who have them. I can start with yours. Okay. And you know, there's carrots out there, guys, and chocolate somewhere, and you know, pistachios as well. So,
and Richard's bringing in some bananas.
Okay, good.
So
and I'm sorry about the chocolate.
Before you leave.
I wasn't feeling great yesterday, so I thought they're going to have to do with pistachios because I don't see chocolate here.
So I wanted to congratulate all of you on completing the course, and we'll meet again February 2nd for the next module, which is presenting the path with Don Brown, I hope. And I talked to Robbie yesterday. For those of you who are still waiting for your completion card from Mind and Its Potential, he promised me he would give them to me tomorrow. So if you see me tomorrow or at the next module, I'll have them for you. And he said, we all passed. he said, we're all special snowflakes.
So
thank you.
Bring me up your completion cards. I'll sign them, and then you hang on to them. Uh-huh. Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure. Oh, my pleasure. And when does the next module start, Joanna?
February 2nd.
February 2nd. Okay. I'm glad my last name is Smith, because...